Recorded live at the wonderful Big Sushi Studio, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Slaughter Film.
Hello, you filthy animals. I am Corey Fatty Boombaladdy Carr, and I am accompanied, as always, by Forrest. Fear is the great mind killer Taylor. And this is Slaughter Film, the weekly podcast devoted to reviewing the films that are legendary, even in hell. Today, we're going to take a little vacation from what Forrest has been doing lately.
I kind of had the detox.
Yeah. So, originally the idea for today's recording, we were going to talk about movies that scared the shit out of us when we were young, but weren't horror movies.
Yeah.
And that kind of turned into like a kinder trauma episode.
Just talking about all the things that traumatize us as children. Because kids' movies can be pretty fucked up sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, even more so than like regular horror movies.
Yeah. Especially when you're seeing them for the first time as, you know, like kids and stuff.
Yeah.
So, among other things, this is going to probably mostly be just sort of a loose conversation.
It's kind of a bit of a grab bag.
Like. Yeah. The two movies that we're going to be talking about in particular, Forrest is going to share his thoughts on The Brave Frog.
It's an anime from the 80s.
And I'm going to be talking about Fire in the Sky, which really isn't a kid's movie, but I saw it as a kid, and it fucked my world up. So, but we'll get to that stuff in a little bit. How's your week?
I'm here. This is John,
yeah,
the producer's
here.
Yeah,
I feel weird, because like, your name's at the end credits, but then we do the thing at the beginning, and then I'm like, my name's not at the end credits. I do this. So I don't know. Including you in the beginning was always like weird. And I'm like, should I do it or shouldn't I do it? So
I mean, you could just
as a producer.
You don't have to like give me. You don't have to give me like the cool name. You can just be like, and fucking John is here.
And our producer John.
No, you can be depressed.
Just throw
about
it in there.
Yeah.
Just
like,
say it
like
in a sultry voice.
Like if it were written, it would be like the legal info at the bottom of the page.
Well, here, quickly. Let's just try it again. Because I don't think you want to do all three at once. I mean, just right now, off the top of your head, just go ahead, redo the intro with my name in there at the end. Just so everyone can hear, because I don't think it's going
to
sound right.
Okay.
Yeah, just do it.
I'm scared.
Think of new names, just for fun, Z's.
Hey, you filthy animals, this is Corey. I've got a rocket in my pocket car, and I'm accompanied, as always, by Forrest. Look at the size of his shoes, Taylor. And this is Slaughter Film, the weekly podcast devoted to reviewing films that are legendary, even in hell. And also, in the studio, our producer, John.
That sounds great!
This
sounds good! Why don't we do that every time?
I don't know. Okay, we'll do that.
Yeah.
Until I forget, but we'll do it.
Like you forgot to say my name when you just did it at the end?
What? No, I did that intentionally.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, we're talking about stuff that freaked us the fuck out. Oh, but first, talking about what we did over the last week. And I just got to say one thing.
Uh-oh.
Rocky Marathon.
Yes! I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Also, I guess this friend who got me the Rocky stuff, it was, like, super cheap because he got it on Black Friday, so he got, like, two box sets for $15 or whatever. So he decided to get
wild.
Me something else, too, and he just told me now he's getting the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy on Blu-ray.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, this gave me an idea.
You still have a Blu-ray player, though, right?
Well, my roommate has a PS3, so I can just watch it on
that. That'll be the next thing. Actually, I was at Walmart today, and I was looking at the trilogy, and I almost bought it. But also, while I was there, I noticed they have a Blu-ray player for, like, $58.
Yeah, they're pretty cheap now.
I'll get it. And then
you'll get around to
then
it.
Then have it for 5 years, and then it becomes obsolete when the next, like, I don't know, Purple Ray comes
in. Yeah, like, why?
I think I'm gonna go ahead and say that I think the next thing is just gonna be digital.
Yeah, I think Blu-ray is the end of like physical mediums.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I do have to admit, like, the convenience of digital is obviously wonderful, but at the same time, when you spend maybe like $20-$30 on something, it's nice to hold it in your hand.
Yeah,
I think they'll still do like collector's edition stuff, but instead of like it being a disc, it'll be like a thumb drive that's like, instead of like just like your stupid little thumb drive you get, it's like shaped like R2-D2 or some shit like that.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't think DVD will ever go away, though. I think it'll be like vinyl. Like, there will all be people who will be like, DVD is superior,
dude, like,
you know?
Fuck. Like, people were still talking about laser discs.
Yeah.
Laser discs were fucking awesome, man.
See, like, look at this asshole right here.
Well, see, like, sometimes... A lot of times, though, when it comes to Laserdisc, a lot of the special features are available on DVD and
I totally get it. But the point of the matter is, like, there will always be those holdouts who are like, no, yeah. Betamax was the fucking best.
Right, right. Well, even with DVD in particular, right. like, okay, compared to VHS, VHS degrades over time, you know, where DVD, for a lot of people, is good enough.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean. To go above and beyond is good, but you
I
really
mean,
don't...
ideally you watch it on like film cans. But who the fuck's gonna do that?
Right?
Like,
yeah, exactly.
But
yeah, Forrest, I'm surprised that you don't actually have like a was it 8mm like
I'm
camera?
Poor as shit. But if
but like if of all the things that you would like save up money for and just to buy, like I'm gonna get original reels of all the
Dude,
movies I love.
If I was well to do, that is what I would spend my whole
you
life
just, yeah, in your yeah, basement.
My like... basement would just be a fucking theater where I have like film cans of
nice.
All my favorite movies.
Perfect. Yeah.
You just see smoke from your cigars like yeah. coming into frame. You know?
Not even cigars. He's got a pipe. He's got like a proper yeah. pipe with like really fine tobacco.
That is my dream.
Made of like endangered elephant ivory.
Okay, okay. I think we're getting out of hand.
Hopefully,
oh, now we're getting out of hand.
Hopefully,
sorry
when my...
for jumping the shark, Corey. Yeah.
Hopefully, when my budding hip hop career really takes off, that's what I'll spend all my money.
Oh yeah, what was your MC name again? It was so good. You just told me the other day your hip hop name.
I don't remember.
What are you drinking?
Yeah.
Damn it. Corey, do you remember his awesome hip-hop name? He
no,
was
I don't think
just
he mentioned
talking
it to
about
me.
It.
Oh.
Whatever.
I wanted to call myself
There's a
old
failed
dirty
joke.
Bastard.
Gotta edit
yeah. But somebody already took it.
There's a failed joke. Gotta edit that one out.
Sorry. Oh. I can't think on my feet.
I've been drinking.
Especially not when I've been hitting the golden monkey.
That sounds like
that
a euphemism.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. This is going to be the best podcast ever.
So this week, I'll tell you what I did this week, since we're talking about things we did this week. I completed the entire first season of The Walking Dead game.
Okay.
It's finally all done and completed, and I literally almost cried at the end of it. It's fucking incredible. Game of the year Damn. For me. Easily the game of the year for me is The Walking Dead game by Telltale. If you have not played it and you like adventure
to.
Games,
yeah.
And if you like The Walking Dead, you need to play this fucking game. It's yeah. I cannot stop talking about it.
I need to play it. Oh, speaking of games, not to like go back or whatever, but
yeah, hip hop name game, is that what we're going to?
No, I totally finally got my friends interested in Civilization. Because I was talking about this for like 20 something years, because I first played Civilization when it like came out for the Super Nintendo in 91. And everyone thinks that I'm an idiot because like the game's all about like fucking city building and culture and shit. Who wants to play that? And I was like, it's good. But then my roommate got Civ 5 and he's been playing it like for hours on end. And he convinced my two other friends to play it now. And now everyone's playing Civilization and I get to be the wise sage who, you know, was imparting this wisdom
it.
For all these years.
Or
and they finally realized how great it is.
You're like the Civ hipster. Like, I was into it way before it was cool.
I totally was into it before it was cool, and now I can say that.
Also, a pro tip for anyone who's playing Civ, Gandhi's a dick.
Montezuma's a dick. Like, Gandhi's kind of a dick, because, like, they're really into him, like, dropping A-bombs and shit. But if I play that game and I meet Montezuma too early, I'll restart the game, because I know he's going to fucking go to war with me in a second. So.
Fucking assholes. Yeah. World leaders.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I got all my history facts from reading comic books. So. But over this past weekend, I went and saw Red Dawn.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Red Dawn. Maybe you've heard of it.
What else came out this? What else came out this weekend?
I don't know.
Killing Them Softly, which I want to see. Like,
yeah, that looks kind of good.
Is Hobbit this week?
No. Hobbit's next week. Yeah, I wouldn't have
14th
given
14th or something.
Yeah, the 14th. I wouldn't have given Killing Them Softly a second thought, except for the fact that it's directed by Andrew Dominik, who directed a movie about 5 years ago called The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. And I'm probably, like, boring everyone I know to death because I've been talking about how that's, like, the best movie I've seen in the last, like, 20 years or whatever. And anyone who hasn't seen it should fucking see it because it's amazing and it'll blow your freaking mind.
Go on.
Yeah, but anyway, the director also made this movie, so now I'm going to see it just because I liked that first movie so fucking much. So.
Oh, okay. Very good.
That's all I got to say about that.
In short, for anyone who cares, Red Dawn is okay. The original's better, but it doesn't have North Koreans.
Right, that's a big twist, right? It's North Korea, instead of Russia. Which, yeah.
They can't
play as well?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it playing as well, because back during the Cold War, like, the U.S. and Soviet Union were pretty much, like, pound for pound, like, equal in strength.
Like, whereas our government now is more concerned with North Korea than we don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, they have a rocket? It only goes 50 feet? What the fuck do I care? What are you talking about?
Also, like, the original Red Dawn, it wasn't an action movie.
It was like a war movie.
Maybe
almost.
Like 50-50 or something.
I mean, but like this new one looks like it's fucking balls out, like Mission Impossible style action.
Well, that's
action.
The thing. It has like its moments, but they don't hold as much weight as some of like similar scenes in the original.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's a band of kids and they call themselves the Wolverines. And they attack these North Koreans, like these little outposts.
Do Koreans even know what Wolverines are?
I don't know. There's some Asian equivalent. But
that's racist.
But is it? I don't know. But like, okay, so you see them attack and like there's a checkpoint blown up or whatever. But like, as a viewer, I have no reference. Is that important? Did you just pick the first thing that you saw and blew it up? Where the original, it showed like there's more strategy. They picked off like they would follow trade routes and like try to stop shipments of supplies and stuff, and it was how real war is fought.
Yeah.
And so, like, when these teenagers are getting all these, all this attention for how well they're doing, it's like, what the fuck are they doing? Like, there's one scene, because this movie's more urban than the original.
Right.
Where they shoot some North Koreans, and then they're, like, on top of a roof, like, in a city. You know, there's, like, tall buildings, and the kid's, like, holding his gun over his head, screaming Wolverines. And I'm like, what the fuck? There's probably Koreans, like, two blocks over. What are you doing?
That's, like,
get the fuck out of here.
Sniper window shopping.
Yeah, like, it doesn't play as well. Right. So.
And, I mean, do they even go through, like, the stuff they went through in the original, where it's, like, them, like, slowly, like, starving and, like...
And, like,
that level of, like, the personal relationships kind of quickly deteriorating as, like, they're going through the winter and shit.
You know, you don't
like,
see
that was
them.
Really like the big great part of it.
Yeah,
like,
that was the best thing.
It's like you're
it.
Taking all your like beloved 80s stars, you know, like Emilio Estevez is
Swayze.
There, right?
He's
right.
So Swayze. Dreamy.
I know.
Like, all of those heartthrobs, and then you're like making them like be really humanized.
Yeah.
No, all the drama in this comes from the two brothers. And how the one keeps running off to save his girlfriend, and it's
God
like, you can't
it.
Do that because you're going to lead them back here. They're looking for us. And it's like, you don't know. When mom died, you joined the Marines, went to Iraq. You weren't there for me. And it's like, shut the fuck up. I hate, like, when I left, I told my friend who I went to see this with, and I'm like, I would have been like, how old are you? 16. Yeah. And I would just shot him in the face. There, you know, this is war. It's not a place for teenagers, because you whine and you do stupid shit. And like, I was really fucking irritated by that character. And that's where all the drama comes from. In the original, you see like seasons change.
Right.
They're
out there.
Yeah.
They're there
this
for
is
years.
All like over a couple weeks.
Oh.
I know.
Boo.
It's really lame.
Okay.
I don't know. So
let's stop talking about this.
Yes, let's.
Plus, there's no Swayze.
That's true.
That I can't
watch
it.
I'm surprised. Like, oh man, they could have made it at least like a CG Swayze like they did for Tupac,
or like Tron Legacy.
Or even like they did for Looper, just make someone look like Swayze.
Yeah.
Get a Swayze lookalike and have him in there.
We could have dug up his bones and then scan them with some sort of like 3D scanning.
Yes.
Scanner.
Yeah, they have those.
And I know
that's how they did the Tupac thing.
That's true. Yeah.
That's exactly how they did it.
What is this holographic technology for if we can't recreate Swayze?
Right.
Fuck Swayze,
and then soon it'll
Swayze?
Be. Yeah.
The Swayze already dead. That was the first Swayze. We're waiting for the second Swayze. Now.
First, we'll scan and recreate Swayze, but then we will scan and recreate Marilyn Monroe, and men will buy her and have sex with her.
That's very
it'll
true.
It'll be the hot new Christmas item.
That's
are
true.
Are you listening, Japan?
These holograms are one step closer to sex bots. So anyway,
yes, please.
You could call them Holly Grams. Get it? Like her name's Holly.
I don't get it.
Do I eat it? What are you talking about?
So, not to go off on a tangent here, but we had a theme that we were talking about. Oh yeah, kid stuff that fucked us up.
Kinder trauma.
I'm gonna talk briefly about, because there's tons of stuff I saw as a kid that freaked me the fuck out. And also just like reminiscing with friends, like my buddy Harvey always talks about Watership Down.
Which yeah, I was going to mention that.
I had to point out first because that movie is fucking nuts. I didn't see it till I was like in my late teens, but I could imagine being 6 years old and watching the rabbit get the rope around his neck where he's like coughing up blood and shit like that. What the hell? Like, I realize that the book like has some kind of like political allegory, but like when you're saying it's a cartoon with talking rabbits, every kid's like, yay! And right? then they're like, ah! But that's nothing. That's nothing compared to the Plague Dogs, which I haven't seen. I've just seen the scene where the people kill the dogs that are like used for medical experimentation or whatever.
Yeah, I heard that's like.
I'm
even
like, what the fuck, British people? Why are your cartoons so traumatizing? So shout out to Watership Down, but that's not part of my childhood, so I won't mention that too much. I will mention Transformers the movie. Okay.
Yeah. I think I've heard this story. It's a great story.
For all none of you who don't know this, Transformers was a cartoon from the 80s that was basically a half-hour toy commercial.
Wait, what?
I've
never heard of this.
It was a way to sell toys because, like, you know,
I thought Michael Bay made Transformers.
No.
I'm leaving now. I'm leaving now.
Michael Bay made the worst thing in history, but back in the day, Transformers was kind of badass. but it was brilliant because, like, the show was a commercial, and then there were commercials in the show, so they literally, like, bought that whole airspace just, right. just to showcase their toys. Here's the problem when you make cartoons that are there to sell toys. Kids still get attached to it. I had all my favorite Transformers, like Jazz was awesome, and Ironhide was awesome, and even the bad guys like Soundwave and Starscream were totally badass. Like, every time I saw a Volkswagen Beetle, I would shout Bumblebee car because it was Bumblebee, so that's for years I just called those cars Bumblebee cars. I love those Transformers. When the movie came along, the whole idea was to get rid of the old line to make room for the new toys that they wanted kids to pester their parents about buying. How they got rid of the old line was to kill them horribly in the first, like, 20 minutes of the movie. I sat there and watched in abject terror as all of my favorite Transformers were blown away in, like, very violent fashion. Because it was animated by the same guys who animated Fist of the North Star. So when they got shot, like, they were getting ripped apart and falling apart. And before this, like, whenever they got shot in the show, it just, like, knocked them down. And then that was it. Nope, not here. They're dying. My mom took me to my grandparents' house, and she literally just put the movie in as, like, something for me to do for an hour and a half while she talked with my grandparents.
Here, watch this. Yeah. I gotta go smoke cigarettes.
Yeah. She came back, like, 25 minutes later, and I was in tears. And she's like, Forrest, what's wrong? And I just looked at her, and I was like, Optimus Prime died! But that didn't terrify me, it just made me sad. What terrified me was Starscream's death. That is, like, burned into my brain.
Yeah, how did he die again?
Okay, Starscream, he's the guy that was, like, the second in command, but he always wanted to be the head bad guy, so he's always messing with Megatron. And it was, like, comical. Like, he'd always, like, try to, like, beat Megatron, and then Megatron would come back and be like, Starscream! And it was this big thing, and it was like, oh, that Starscream, he's so goofy. Well, in this one, it seems like he finally kills Megatron. Like, he launches him out into space, and then he becomes the king of the Decepticons or whatever. And Megatron doesn't die. He becomes Galvatron, which is, like, even more badass Megatron, who's now voiced by Leonard Nimoy. He comes back to reclaim control of the Decepticons, and the first thing he does is murder Starscream. He shows up and Starscream's like, Megatron, is that you? That's my Starscream voice. He's like, Megatron, is that you? And he's like, here's a hint. And then turns into a fucking gun and shoots him. And Starscream doesn't just die. He, like, sits there frozen in terror. And his whole body rusts and then, like, crumbles away.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This guy was, like, the comedy relief bad guy and, like, my favorite bad guy because he was, like, funny and goofy. And I just watched him, like, disintegrate.
Starscream was kind of a dick.
He was a dick, but he was funny. But, yeah, just watching
and
him,
so
like,
was rot on his tombstone.
Yeah, I was just watching him, like, crumble away was horrible. There was another scene where these robots are, like, inside Unicron, who's, like, the big, like, god robot, and he's, like, powering himself by melting them down. So you see them, like, being dropped into lava, and then it cuts to them in the lava as their faces are melting off and shit. who the fuck made this?
The most terrifying part of the Transformers movie is the fact that the entire soundtrack is just Dare to Be Stupid by Weird Al Yankovic on repeat. That's like the whole hour and a half long. It's just that song over and over again.
It also has the song You Got the Touch, which is later used in Boogie Nights.
Yep.
You've got the touch. You've got the power. Yeah. It was the 80s. I mean, everyone was doing lots of coke and voting for Ronald Reagan. So, you know, we didn't know any better. So there's that. That fucked me up. That's like the only thing from my childhood. But then there's stuff that I watched like with my siblings, because I'm the oldest of four kids, which means that I had to put up with a lot of stupid kid shit long after I had like outgrown it. Like, I had to pretend that there was still a Santa Claus for like a decade after I stopped believing because, you know, for my brother's sake. So I used to watch a bunch of dumb shows. There was one whose name I can't remember. I'm going to describe it. And if one of you guys can like remember the name of this show, let me know, because it freaked me out. It was about this family who was like all about, it was a Christmas like special. This family was all about Santa, and they made these two dolls for him, and they were like magic dolls because they were a magic family for some reason. And like they said that they like feed on love. So like the more you love them, the like stronger they get or whatever. So when Santa comes to their house, they like sneak the dolls inside of his bag or whatever so he can have them. Okay, all well and good. Until Santa's, like, going back to the North Pole, and this bad guy, I think he's, like, Jack Frost. Like, isn't Jack Frost always the bad guy to Santa? But anyway, he sneaks in and, like, cuts open Santa's bag and takes out, there's two dolls, there's a boy and a girl. He takes out the boy doll, and he's like, look at me, I have a doll. And then he, like, flies away. And Santa didn't even know the dolls were in there, so he didn't even think to say, hey, that's my doll, because he didn't find out until they got back. So he gets back, and he finds the girl doll. And, like, him and Mrs. Claus, like, give her a name, and, like, she's all happy and wonderful. Then it randomly cuts back to, like, this is, like, years later now when the dolls have, like, grown up because dolls can grow, apparently.
This sounds like a really estranged retelling of Genesis.
It's bizarre. So, yeah, then it goes to the bad guy's house, and you see the boy doll, and he's, like, all skinny and sickly because nobody's loving him. And he's like, please, sir, I need to be loved. And he's like, shut up. And he doesn't even, like, name him. He calls him Hey You. He's like, Hey You, that's your name. Hey You. So anyway.
Quit sassing me or I'll stick you up my butt again.
So I figured, oh, okay, there's gonna be a scene where, like, Santa comes to rescue him or whatever.
Nope.
No! That's the last we see him. The rest of it is, like, the girl doll talking about how awesome it is to live with Santa and to be loved. I'm like, what about your fucking brother? And it makes sense because, like, Santa didn't even know that the dolls were in his bag when the guy stole it, so he never assumed that it was him. But I'm just there like, that poor doll. He's, like, dying from lack of love or whatever. And maybe it was a series and I just saw the first one and maybe, like, eventually he gets saved. But that's all I ever saw and it freaked me the fuck out. So I think I did a pretty good job describing that show. If anybody knows the name of that, let me know so I can throw it in a fire.
It sounds like a collection of a fever dream of, like a Christian youth camp. Just, like, freaking out.
Yeah. The next thing I wanted to talk about was, I can't remember where we were. We were at some, like, family, like, thing, like an outdoor show or whatever. But they had this, like, stupid, like, kids stage or whatever for, like, they perform, like, kids shows and stuff. And I had to watch it, even though I was, like, 12 at this point, but I had to do it for my stupid brothers.
You think a lot of things are stupid.
Yeah, everything's dumb. I'm a teenager. Everything sucks.
So you're saying you're still a teenager.
I am. Nobody understands me except the music that I listen to.
And the girl I like. She just doesn't know it yet.
That's right. She will when she gets this mixtape.
She wills when she sees me out her window.
Oh, dear. But, yeah, this play, again, I can't for the life of me know what the name was, but it was, like, a lesson about friendship, so, you know, already it's great. It's about this, like,
Jesus Christ.
Is she, like, she's, like, a cat or, like, a tiger or something? She's some kind of cat. But anyway, she's friends with a catfish. So it's a cat and a catfish just, like, and they all wore, like, these creepy, like, animatronic, like, masks or whatever. And they were, like, dancing around or whatever. And then her two, like, cat sisters were jealous that she, like, had this friend. So they respond the way any jealous person did. They fucking ate the catfish. There's a scene where they just like corner him and they're like, "We're gonna eat you," and then it like fades away. And the next thing, the good cat's there, and her two sisters come up like, "We ate your friend and he was delicious." And they fucking pull out his like skull and they're just holding it. And you know, later on, she like gets a new friend and everything's happy. But all I'm thinking about is they ate her friend, like, and it's never addressed again. They just fucking ate him.
Let that be a lesson to all the kids out there. Cannibalism is not the answer.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there's that. But now I'm going to talk about, like, what I've actually, like, prepared.
Oh, so this wasn't the prepared stuff?
Oh, no.
Oh, he's going to talk about the brave frog now.
Yeah, I'm talking about the brave frog, motherfucker. So,
Jesus.
So, this is back when, you know, video stores were still a thing. So, I think it was, like, 96 or something like that. But, my mom, in the kids section, found this movie about a frog called The Brave Frog. And she's like, "Oh, this would be great for Stevie. Stevie's my brother. He's like really into like turtles and frogs and all those like cool like swamp dwelling animals or whatever." And she's like, "Oh, this is so cute. He'll love this." So she got it. I was super excited about it because it was an anime, and I was like 14, so I was just like just starting to get into anime, and I was like, "Yeah, Japanimation!" You know, this is back when I was like, I mean, I still am a Japanophile, but I was like a super Japanophile, so like anything from Japan was automatically awesome in my opinion.
Did you watch like anime on Sci-Fi, like on Saturdays?
Oh yeah,
and stuff?
Oh dude, I love the anime on Sci-Fi Channel. Yeah, so we watch it thinking it's going to be this cute movie. It's not. It's 10 times like fucked up of like anything I can think of. I can't even talk right now because it's so fucked up. So the story is about this little frog named Jonathan, and when he was a tadpole, all of his tadpole brothers and sisters were eaten by, they call them monsters, but I think they're supposed to be like newts or like salamanders or something. So you just see all of his brothers getting eaten in like the first 5 minutes. He escapes with his parents and they go to this place called Rainbow Pond, which sounds nice. But it's not. It's some sort of, like, crime-ridden hellhole. It's, like, ran by leopard frogs, and leopard frogs are, like, the king shit of the frog world. And the leader is this guy who I cannot remember. I think his name is, like, Leopold. But I call him the Godfrogger because he looks and sounds just like Marlon Brando from The Godfather. And that's your idea of what character he is. He's, like, you know, the crime boss in Rainbow Pond. So we cut to Jonathan, now he's like a little kid, and he befriends Pookie, is her name. She is the daughter of the Godfrogger, so we got like a Romeo and Juliet thing. Because like, Jonathan and his family are tree frogs, and the leopard frogs are like frog racists, so they only want to associate with other leopard frogs. So the Godfrogger is all mad that Jonathan is seeing Pookie. So he sends his like henchmen, who are these two frogs named Mo and Lefty, typical gangster names, and they beat the shit out of Jonathan, like, 3 times. They, like, hold him down and punch him repeatedly to the point where he's, like, bruised and battered. And by this point, my brother is, like, already starting to get upset. He's like, "What's going on?" But it's okay, because then he's rescued by a big frog named Goliath, who I think is supposed to be, like, the token black guy, because, like, if these were like a live action, like played by real people, he'd be played by like Ving Rhames or something like that. But he's the only frog that stands up to the leopard frogs, like Rain or whatever. Like, there's a scene where they're oppressing these snails. They're attacking these snails, and like Jonathan's father wants him to stop, but they tell him to shut up, and like Jonathan's father is just sort of like, okay, because like he's timid or whatever. And Jonathan is all mad about that because he's like, you know, Goliath's this like, you know, great guy, and you're so weak. And like this scene where there's a dinner table, and he's like, if it was up to you, we'd be eating snails right now because they were going to mess with those snails or whatever. He's like, I hate you. And then Jonathan's father responds by slapping the shit out of him and giving him some lecture about honor and respect or whatever.
Why don't we have snail soup? If it was up to you, we would. Father, I hate you.
So I figure, okay, he's going to be looking up to Goliath and not his father, but then he's going to realize that his father's an okay guy, too. It's going to be that sort of story. Well, no, it's not, because in the next scene, Goliath's dead.
Oh no! I'm coming. I'll save you. Oh, no, Goliath.
Jonathan!
Goliath! Who did this to you? Oh, no, Goliath. Oh, who did it? Goliath.
Sorry, did it.
They're walking somewhere, and they see, like, a jug there, and he's like, what's this jug? Some drunk left. And then they look over, and they just see Goliath all beat up, and he's like, it was Zeri. Zeri is, like, this, this like, crayfish who's, like, the main, like, hitman of the God Frogger. I'll talk about him more. But anyway, he's like, it was Zeri. He beat me up because I wouldn't submit to Leopold or whatever. And then he dies. And then Jonathan is crying. And so is my brother. But we keep telling him it's going to get better. You know, these, I mean, every Disney movie is fucked up. Like, but they always have a happy ending. Everything's right. Going to be okay. Then it gets boring. There's like sequences of like Jonathan and Pookie like becoming friends. These are the scenes that are actually that feel like kids movies, because like there's a scene where they're trying to like, you know, race like swimming or whatever, and there's a scene where they're like learning how to dance, and like it's kind of cute like kid stuff, and it's like, okay, we're on the right track now. Then it gets horrifying. We meet Mrs. Turtle. Mrs. Turtle is sad because all of her eggs have died. And Jonathan and Pookie come, and like they find one egg. They're like, Mrs. Turtle, look, there's still one egg here. And she's like, oh, bless your heart. I'll take care of it, and I'll raise him to be a good turtle. Next scene, she's just getting beat up by Zeri the crayfish, because apparently the God Frogger wants the egg for like his breakfast. And Zeri wails on her with his claws, and then she falls into a rose bush and like gets killed by the thorns. But fortunately, like, Jonathan and Pookie come back, and, like, Zeri runs off before he can take the egg. But there's this huge scene where, like, Mrs. Turtle's dying and says, like, take care of my egg. Teach my turtle to be, like, honorable and respectful, like good turtles. And then it cuts to, like, a rose petal falling as she dies. My brother is in tears. He is a horrible mess. And we're like, everything's going to be okay. It's still going to be good. So Jonathan and Pookie are taking care of the egg. And then a snake shows up. And this was, like, really early anime where, like, the English translation was just, like, throw as many lines in as you can just to match the mouth moving. Even if it doesn't, if it's like the speed racer, like, speed talking. So the snake's like, oh, I don't think you knew, but snakes love eating eggs. We saw all of them whole, too. It's very simple. Let me show you. It's that kind of line. So they run from the snake, and they, like, hide in a hole, but the egg won't fit. So then they gotta watch in terror as the snake just reaches in and grabs the egg and swallows it. At this point, I'm fucking ready to cry. Like, my brother's already a mess, but I'm like, what the hell is going on? But then it's okay, because the snake, like, spits up the egg, and he's like, oh, that must be rotten or something. It's terrible. And then, like, Jonathan finds Mo and Lefty, like, playing with the egg, and he, like, runs to try and get it back. And they bring it to the God Frogger, and the God Frogger has, like, Zeri try to, like, hatch it open with his claws. He hits it, and it just, like, bends, but it doesn't break. And they're like, what kind of egg is this? It doesn't break. And then Jonathan shows up, and he's like, we need to take care of that egg. That egg's Mrs. Turtle, and it was her last wish. We take care of her baby or whatever. And then he sends in a doctor to observe the egg, and he's like, it's okay. This isn't an egg. It's a ping pong ball. And then, like, Jonathan starts crying. He's like, Mrs. Turtle died protecting a ping pong ball. And, like, he runs off. And then, nothing. That's it. That's how it, like, the next scene is Jonathan sitting at the pond being sad. And, like, Pookie comes to comfort him. And then the God Frogger shows up and, like, apologizes to his daughter for being a bad father.
This can't be it.
This is it. And then they cry together. And then Jonathan's like, I think everything's going to be all right in Rainbow Pond. And I'm like, no, it's not. There's a psycho crayfish that just, like, chops people to death and shit. He's still out there. Like, what? The bad guys didn't get any comeuppance.
This can't be real.
It is totally fucking real. And I will explain why it's so disjointed. It's actually based on a TV show. It was, like, a 39-episode, like, show in Japan. When it got released in America, they just cut up all the episodes and put them together and made a movie.
It's like Robotech.
Yeah, it's a lot like Robotech.
Yeah, tech.
But it's, again, it's fucking nuts. Like, the fact that this was in the children's section, because, like, my brother had, like, nightmares about it. He was, like, this poor, like, six-year-old kid just watching all of his favorite animals get butchered horribly. And it's really fucking sexist, too. Like, any woman that speaks is, like, accused of being a nag. Like, there's a scene where Jonathan is, like, just sitting at home, and the mother's like, Jonathan, I want you to help me sweep the floor. And he's like, oh, you're such a nag. Get away from me. Like, he storms off. And then, like, another scene, Pookie is, like, confronting her father about how, like, she never had a mother. And it's like, Mrs. Turtle takes care of me. She's a great mother. And it's like, I'm, like, the godfather's like, stop being, like, insubordinate or whatever. And she's like, you talk to me like a little girl. And he's like, well, you're soon becoming a woman, a nag who cries. Like, it's like, you nag or cry, and sometimes you do both. And I'm like, even as, like, a 14-year-old, I was like, this is really fucking sexist. So that's the Brave Frog. I learned...
to not show it to your kids.
Well, yeah, I learned that. But I learned in trying to find it, to like review it for this, that there was a sequel called The Brave Frog's Great Adventure, where I assume like fucking aliens come and like dissect everyone.
He gets scooped up and brought to like a middle school science class. That's what it is. Him and his family.
Whereas nothing happens to the crayfish, because like this is the lesson that it teaches you, that people are assholes and they murder people and then they get away with it. And you know, the person that heroically died defending her baby, it wasn't her baby, it was just a fucking ping pong ball. The end. Enjoy your life, kids.
Can you imagine like the real life equivalent, like, no, my baby,
and
then she's dead, and then it's just like grapefruit.
Oh my, well, I'm sad now, so let's talk about the thing that freaked you out.
All
as a
right.
kid.
Well, I have got a short list here of things that fucked me up.
Okay.
The first, I was just a young boy, you know, learning to read. And occasionally I would sit down with my mom and she would, like, read children's books to me. You know, it was how reading starts, pretty much, you know. We'd go to the library together. And she'd pick out a few things for herself and then a few things for me. One of them was The Giving Tree. It's a great, great award-winning book for kids.
Yeah, I love that book.
You know, it's about this boy who has this tree in his backyard, and he'd climb on it and swing from it. And in a way, at least the way the story's told, it's the tree is sort of like his friend, because he has adventures, and the tree's there. And he carves his name in the tree, and he eats the tree's fruit with apples, you know. And then a few years go by, and... well, he doesn't visit the tree as often anymore. But that's okay, because, you know, the tree loves him the same. And soon he's a teenager.
Oh, boy.
And he carves the name of his girlfriend in the tree. And again, you know, he doesn't visit. Goes off to college. Does God knows what.
All kinds of debauchery.
Now he's an adult with children. Didn't marry that girl whose name is carved in her. Some other slut. And then what does he do? He chops the tree down for wood to build his house to put his stupid kids in. It's a giving tree. The tree loved him unconditionally. But when you're like six, that fucks you up.
Yeah.
My brain hurt. I cried. I was fucked up. The giving tree. Oh, my God. It just wants reciprocation. It just wants to be loved.
It doesn't want to be loved. It just wants to give.
It wants to give.
It gives for a reason. So that's the first thing that ruined my life.
Book The Giving Tree ruined
yes,
your life.
It did.
Hey, when you're 6 years old, that sort of thing can fuck you up.
That's like a heavy concept.
Yeah.
The next thing, this is a short thing. There's actually two that are very similar. RoboCop.
Oh, yeah.
For years and years, I always remembered, because it went a long time before I saw it a second time,
because
I saw this when I was like 6 or 7, too. The scene where Murphy dies before he becomes RoboCop.
Yeah.
Like, that's... I watched it recently, and it's brutal, but it's really quick. But in my mind, for years, I always remembered it as being very slow and, like, agonizing, and you saw, like, every shot fired, and that screwed me up. I was, like, shocked watching that.
Because
at the time, like, there was a cartoon and a line of toys. It's like, oh, we're going to sit down and watch RoboCop. Okay, we're going to watch RoboCop. RoboCop's cool. And then you see this guy get blown away in, like, you know, high detail and everything. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Oh, poopy. That's what I said.
Yeah, there you go.
And then immediately after that, Short Circuit, with Johnny Five. The same thing happens to him. He gets like beat to death, or practically to death, by these two mobsters with bats.
That's Short Circuit 2. That's
Is
right.
Is it the sequel?
Yeah, I saw that in the theater, and that freaked me out,
too. I'm like, no! He's not a human, but he has a personality all of his own. I can't let this happen, but I'm just a child that's a movie, and I can't understand that because it's a bigger idea that I can wrap my brain around.
He can clearly feel pain. Like,
no, that's the thing, is like they made him feel pain because like he would audibly react when he'd get hit, but robots wouldn't know.
Well, he does.
They would.
I knew.
You would think it would be like a binary situation, like, oh, I'm on and working, I'm off.
Yeah, well, no. Whoever designed him was a sadistic motherfucker who made him feel pain, apparently. And then he bleeds, too. Remember when he's, like, bleeding?
He's got, like, oil
he's
or whatever?
He's bleeding battery, like, fluid or whatever. Yeah.
That's a bad situation. I know. People wonder why I'm, like, a 27-year-old cynic and I'm angry.
Because he saw Johnny Five get beat up by some mobsters.
It's okay. No, Giving Tree, no one will love you. That's just the way the world is. The next thing that really fucked me up, which this wasn't so much like an emotional ruining of my life, but like a shock type thing. Have you ever heard of the cartoon Sektars?
No, but when you were describing it, I do remember the seeing images of it, but I never watched it.
Sektars, the Warriors of Symbion. It was a cartoon in a line of toys. About some distant world that was, you know, had very advanced technology, and they were doing research with insects, and then something went wrong, and their technology and the insects, everything was transformed so that people were like half insect, and of course this caused some guy and a group of half insect people to be evil, and then the other half insect people were fighting them. And that was, like, the gist of the show, pretty much. It was just human people with bug eyes, and sometimes they'd have wings. But the thing that really screwed me up was, unlike Masters of the Universe, where they would just ride a giant tiger, they would ride giant spiders or flies. And up until this point, I had no idea what this show was. I'd seen, like, toys here and there, or, like, coloring books. But it's like a summer day. I'm jazzed. I'm playing in the pool. Oh, my grandparents are here. They stopped at a yard sale on the way. Oh, they got me toys. Awesome. Sektars. What the fuck is this? But they're toys. I don't know. Oh, my God. They had one of the spiders that they ride on. And this thing was the size of, like, an oven mitt or whatever.
Yeah, those
it
toys back in the day, they were huge.
I know. And so they hand it to me. And so it's got like a hard plastic face, and the rest of it's like fuzzy fake fur.
Oh yeah, that
like
thing.
A tarantula. And I lost my mind. I thought they were trying to like make me hold this giant real spider, and I started screaming and crying, and I wouldn't shut the fuck up. Funny thing is though, like a half hour later, I got the courage. I'm like, okay, it was just a toy. My mom said it was just a toy. I'm going to go play with these toys. My grandparents got me some toys. I'm going to play with them. And I went over to the spider, and all over again, I lost my fucking mind. I started crying and screaming. By the end of the day, it was just sitting on the dining room table with a towel, like a kitchen towel, laying over it so I wouldn't see it. It's like when you put a blanket or something over an ostrich's head so it can't see you and it calms down.
This says so much about you.
That's great.
I fucking lost it.
That's a great story, but all I'm thinking about now is how fucking awesome toys were in the 80s.
Yeah, they were enormous.
They were like 3 feet tall.
They were as big as my face.
Yeah. Yeah, toys nowadays suck.
So I don't remember anything scaring me for a while.
Okay, hard ass.
After the Giving Tree and Sektars, I was pretty hardened. I was a tough one. But then, the big craze in the 90s were UFOs and aliens.
Not
pogs.
And so, like, also pogs.
Like, every couple of months on TV, like ABC, NBC, there was some, like, UFO special. And,
Alien Autopsy on Fox.
Yeah. I used to own a copy of that on VHS. But another thing that used to, on occasion, involve stories of of UFOs and aliens was Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah.
Now, this is a show I don't remember, because I think it was on too late for me to have regularly stayed up and watched it, and I was kind of young, but I think like during the summer and I was home and I didn't have to go to bed, my mom would watch it, so I would watch it with her. Naturally, it's late, all the lights are off. Now, here's this show starring Robert Stack with his, like, creepy, serious yeah. voice with his, like, overcoat yeah. talking about how some woman had was in the, you know, on some dirt path in the country at night, and then there was a UFO, and she was abducted, and she went missing, and then there was lost time, and all these things, yeah, and I'm yeah. like, and they would describe the UFO as running silent. There was no sound at all, and it would just beam people up. So there were a whole series of like, summer nights where I would sleep terribly because I have nightmares about just getting beamed up out of my bed. Then, of course, a few years later, I'm like becoming a teenager. I would watch like the same type of stuff on the History Channel with like History's Mysteries or like In Search of, starring or rather hosted by Leonard Nimoy. They would talk about a lot of the same shit. And then, of course, that led into X-Files. But somewhere in between, I was turned on to a film called Fire in the Sky from 93.
Oh, man.
By I think it was my grandmother showed me that. I think it was on cable or something. She's like, oh, you like UFOs? Here, sit and watch this. And I'm like, oh, okay. I was kind of excited because I'm like, oh, a whole movie?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a creepy episode of Unsolved Mysteries. It's a movie. And like, with movie in my mind, I'm thinking like, E.T., this is going to be fun. Fucking not fun. All right, so I'll just get into Fire in the Sky.
Okay.
How does it think? What makes it move? Why does it breathe? Questions anyone would ask about a man if they'd never seen one before. So for 5 days, a man was borrowed.
Written by Tracy Tormé. She did. She's actually kind of interesting. She did a lot of wrote a lot of episodes for Sliders or Star Trek Next Generation.
Oh, cool!
And like the '90s Outer Limits.
Okay,
stuff like that.
That's pretty awesome.
The director was Robert Lieberman. And he did a lot of stuff for TV, but the only recognizable film that he did was Mighty Ducks 3.
Didn't exactly set the world on fire.
No. Actually, I kind of feel weird. Like, the past couple episodes, I've mentioned, like, directors that have gone on to do butt. And he's a pretty good example. This movie is better than Mighty Ducks 3, though.
Oh, okay.
It's about a group of four loggers led by Mike Rogers, who is played by Robert Patrick, which you might remember as a little character called T-1000 from Terminator 2. And he later went on to play Special Agent John Doggett in the later episodes of The X-Files. He's head of a group of loggers. It's kind of like a ragtag group. It's not like official logging company or anything. Mm. So these group of guys go into the woods. They're all different type of characters. A couple of them aren't getting along. One of them has a checkered past, a lot of, I don't know, he's got like a rap sheet and all that. So they don't get along, and he's the one that they don't trust. But, you know, hey, we got to work hard and stick together because we have this contract and blah, blah, blah. We got to log all these damn trees. So after a long, hard day of work and some heated tempers, they're on their way home through a dark, deserted country road at night. And I'm like, uh-oh. Sitting there watching this on TV, I'm like, this is getting like an Unsolved Mysteries episode. And then off in the distance, they see this glowing red light. I'm like, oh, what is that? Did a plane crash? Is it a forest fire? Well, they keep on the same road, and it just happens to be that they're getting closer to it. But, you know, the whole time, they're like, oh, what is that? We gotta check this out. Someone could be hurt. They finally pull up to it, and all their jaws drop. It's this thing, this red thing glowing and floating in the air, and of course it's like a UFO. Then we have Travis Walton. He's like the starry-eyed dreamer. He's got all these big plans that, you know, as soon as we're done with this logging contract, I'm going to use the money and I'm going to start a bike shop. Yeah, I'm going to sell motorcycles. It's going to be great. Well, this dum-dum, he gets out of the truck.
This dum-dum.
Well, all the guys are like, what are you doing? Get back here. We need to get out of here. Right. This is creepy. I don't know what this is. And he just walks over to it, and he's standing under the light, and he's like, look, isn't this incredible? And everyone's like, no, it's not incredible, you stupid motherfucker. Get the fuck back in the truck.
Darwin says let him die.
So he's shot with an intense like beam of light. It shoots him back. He lands in like a pile of grass or whatever. And all the guys immediately are like, oh, dumb fuck got shot with a light. Let's get out of here. And so they drive off down the road. Now, of course, Mike, the leader of the group, they get like a mile or two down the road. He's like, no, we can't leave him. And they're like, are you kidding me? Did you see that thing? What the fuck was that? Let's go. And he's like, no, we got to go back. And they go back and he's gone. So he disappears. They report what happened to the authorities. Naturally, they don't believe them.
Yeah.
They think, you know, they're crazy, they're drunk. The one guy who's got the checkered past, they think that maybe he killed him.
Ah.
Because they had, like, I don't know, a disagreement, we'll right. say, earlier in the day involving chainsaws. And so once the police get involved, nothing any of them say is taken seriously.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, the papers here. And so now they've got, not only is there an investigation where they're all suspects for one reason or another, and none of the reasons, like, hold water.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if that guy did kill him, why would the rest of us be protecting him? You know, stuff like that.
And, it's a very valid point.
And that just frustrates the cops more, because they're like, oh, well, we know you did it. We haven't figured that out yet. But you just, you know, you wait. You'll be in jail. But once it's printed in the papers and they've got, like, crank calls and, like, people calling to, you know, from, like, the Inquirer trying to see if they'll sell their story, and they right. just want to be left alone. You know, this guy Travis, he was a friend of theirs. And they don't know what the hell happened, but the whole idea, like, if he just went missing one day, that'd be one thing.
Yeah.
But the fact that he, you know, got shot with a beam of light from some UFO, and, you know, it's just a lot to handle, let alone all the added publicity.
Right.
So a few days go by where it's police investigations and annoying phone calls. And Mike Rogers, he gets a phone call late at night. And his wife's like, just let it go. It's just another prank call. But it happens to be Travis. He doesn't know where he is. He's calling from a payphone at a gas station. And so he's like, oh, my God, that was him. I can recognize his voice. We got to go. She's like, no, it's just another prank. So he gets a bunch of the other guys together. They tear ass through the countryside at night during a thunderstorm. Creepy. And they finally find him. He's got a pretty good idea where he was. And when they pull up to the gas station, he's huddled in a corner, completely naked, like freezing in the rain. And even like when they reach out and touch him, he like recoils and screams like he's, I don't know, skittish, I guess is one way to
right,
say
yeah.
it. But after a few days, he recovers. You know, they take him to the hospital, and he existed for 5 days without any food or water. He's dehydrated. Then he, you know, once he's well enough, he talks to the police. And he says that, you know, he was on this ship. Mm-hmm. And now the police, the detective, starts to think that, okay, they obviously didn't kill him. Maybe this is all for publicity, you know, because it's a small, sleepy town. They all owe money to somebody, whether yeah. it's their, you know, for their house or for the business or whatever.
Right.
So maybe this is all just a money-making scheme. But they all stick to their stories, and they all pass lie detector tests. But still, Travis is trying to get acclimated to normal life. You know, he's still really paranoid. He's always looking mm-hmm. over his shoulder. But now he starts to have flashbacks of his experience. And this is how the viewer learns, you know, he doesn't just tell the story of what he saw or where he was. But, you know, you kind of experience it with him through his flashback. And he wakes up in a ship in this weird gelatinous pod sack thing. And he breaks out of it. It's kind of Matrix-esque.
Yeah, I actually remember that.
All the set designs, I don't know if any of the same people who worked on it worked on X-Files, but it looks very X-Files. In fact, after I rewatched this for to talk about it today, I like went and watched some X-Files. Like, I was in the mood. But he breaks out of this weird sack, and He's presumably on a ship. It kind of looks like a cave. The gravity keeps shifting direction. So there's a period of time where he's kind of crawling on his hands, but his feet are sticking in the air. And then the gravity shifts and he falls to the ground. And it's just really weird and creepy. And there really isn't any sound other than him. He walks, or crawls rather, along this corridor, and he finds a room with what seem to be aliens, like the classic gray, big black eyes. He gets close enough to them, and he realizes, oh, they're just spacesuits. That's probably why so many people, you know, always have that story of you know, gray aliens with
that's actually a really
big
good
black eyes.
Point.
Well, turns out not all of them are just spacesuits. One of them, one of these spacesuits, is being occupied by an alien. See him, grabs him up. Others join, and they hold him down on a like an operating table with big bright lights. Strip off his clothes, cover him with this weird, like a sheet of like membrane or whatever. Like it's not cloth or anything, but they suck the air out of it, and it's like it's kind of like a waterboard type thing where it's wet cloth, and they suck all the air out from underneath, so it like I don't know, he's stuck to the table.
Right.
And then they start to perform tests or whatever. The big thing is they drill into that little, you know, that little pink dot in your eyeball,
right,
the little thing in the corner of your eye. They drill into that. Now, keep in mind, I'm like 9 or something, or 8, and I'm like, oh, freaking out. I'm like so paranoid, and oh my God, that ultimately, that whole scene is the scariest part. Because you see him, and he's sort of paralyzed. He can't move. He can't fight back. He just has to.
But he's conscious.
Yeah.
And that's what's
It's not like he's, you know, it's like an operation where he's drugged and he's out of it. He's put to sleep. He's witnessing and feeling everything that's happening.
Right.
That was like a recurring thing in these alien abduction stories. And that's what always scared the shit out of me as a kid. You'd hear that people would get, you know, beamed up and they wouldn't move. Or they couldn't move, or they couldn't scream out. They would just I don't know, end up on a UFO with aliens, and or on an operating table of some sort, and they'd conduct tests, but they couldn't move or fight back. And that was always something, like, I've mentioned this before, with, like, slasher movies, I'm not ever as scared, because the idea is like, oh, there's a guy. I can fight back against a guy. Well, if I can't fucking move and aliens are sticking needles in my eyeballs, like, what the fuck am I going to do? Like, that's terrifying. The movie goes on to show, like, I think it's 2.5 years later. Travis is you know, he's married now and has 2 kids and he's living a normal life. He and Mike, during that time, they kind of blamed each other for what happened. Like, oh, why did you leave? You didn't, you know, you left, and then by the time you came back, I was gone. Why didn't you help me? Or, why the fuck did you get the fuck out of the truck? So for a while, they weren't getting along. But the very end of the film is the two of them reuniting as friends and, you know, burying the hatchet, so to speak. But yeah, that. Even think about it too much now, like if I'm at home and no one's around, everything's real quiet and the lights are off and one of those type of shows come on, like I still get creeped out. I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do.
Well, you mentioning it creeped me out too, because I saw it when I was when it like first came out in like on video or whatever. And there was also a story, I can't remember if it was on Unsolved Mysteries, it was on one of those shows about the same like true story or whatever. And that was freaky, too. Like, I don't know if you saw that show, too, or not, but...
Probably. I don't know.
Oh, okay. But anyway, it was the same story. It was the same thing, but it was, like, you know, it's all stylized with, like, dramatization or whatever. Yeah. And it was freaky. And then Fire in the Sky was even freakier because it was a Hollywood movie, so they could, like, you know...
They had the
do
budget,
all the
yeah.
effects and everything. But, yeah, like, you describing it freaked me out because I'm, like, having flashbacks about that movie.
Well, actually, this was based on a real story from 1975. You know, Travis, he was like, I don't know, in his 20s in Arizona, and all this is supposed to have happened to him. At first, he was hesitant to talk about it, but then after a while, he, you know, he would have interviews where he'd pretty much tell what happened, like in the movie. But now he's older and has been interviewed since, and he thinks that maybe it was an accident. like maybe the light that hit him was part of like their propulsion system, and so they beamed him up aboard to heal him or something.
But if they're gonna heal him, why didn't they like anesthetize him or something?
Maybe aliens don't do that. I don't know.
Why are aliens dicks? Apparently, there's no like PETA in the alien world. Nobody's talking about like, you know, no more human experimentation.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. That was like a newer theory he had. Yeah. So
that's an interesting theory. I like that because it makes aliens at least slightly less assholes.
Yeah. Well, that's a thing too. Like, because that image of the needle going into his eye stuck with me. And then like since then, even through my childhood, adolescence, it was sort of like, what would you do? What would you learn from doing that?
Yeah,
like
really?
Thinking it was some sort of test. I'm like, why are you doing this? I don't know. Aliens.
Yeah. it doesn't make sense because they're aliens and aliens are weird.
I guess so.
Yeah, aliens as a concept are really, because you were right, in like the late 80s, early 90s, there was a big like alien like thing going on.
Yeah, yeah, but like you go buy your t-shirt with an alien face on it and said, you know, or even after the popularity of the X-Files exploded, you could get your I Want to Believe poster.
Speaking of which, I totally want to get, I'm kind of mad I haven't got one of those yet.
I want that poster too. Yeah. Well, just as a fan of the show, if nothing else.
Yeah. But that's kind of my take on aliens. Like, I know there's no, like, actual, like, real evidence for them, but I want to believe, you know?
Yeah. Well, but I figure the universe is so big, there has to be something,
I would hope so. It would just be depressing if it was just us.
Right.
But I remember this is another thing that freaked me out. In, like, 89, when I was, like, 7, James Cameron's Aliens was shown on, like, network TV for, like, the first time or whatever. And my sister and I watched it. And she was so freaked out because I was 7, so she was like 5. And she was like, Forrest, like when we were like trying to go to sleep, whatever, she was like, Forrest, what if aliens come here? What if aliens are going to get us? And I was like, I was trying to be the older brother. And I was like, it's okay, Michelle, because they live on another planet, so they can't come here. And using 5-year-old logic, she was like, well, they could jump. I'm like trying to say like, no, they can't jump from their planet to our planet. But then meanwhile, like I'm freaking the fuck out because the movie terrified me too, you know?
Yeah. There's one more
aliens
thing.
Aliens are freaky.
Yeah. There's one more thing that we all lived through, but it fucked me up. After, I don't know, a couple years after I saw this movie, do you remember like the whole Heaven's Gate thing?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, there was some night, apparently this was all just happening, because I think it was summer again, or like maybe Christmas break or something. I was home and up late watching TV, but there was like a special report in, you know, my show, whatever I was watching, got interrupted by the news, and they talked about how like there's a suicide pact, and like the camera was showing all these bodies, they were covered with those scars, but you saw their new Nikes, and then it cut to footage of like their leader Applegate, and he had those creepy eyes that just like stared out blankly, and he was talking about how there was a UFO behind the Hale-Bopp comet and they're all gonna get beamed up, and I'm like, oh my god, aliens, are they gonna make me kill myself? I don't want to drink the Kool-Aid. That was another thing that kind of fucked me up after that.
When was that? What year was that?
I don't know. 95-ish?
I think it was 95, because I was 13 when that happened. And I was just starting to realize that you can use your penis for something other than chewing pee. And the suicide freaked me out. But what freaked me out more was the castration. That all these guys...
I forgot about that.
All these guys had castrated themselves. And I was just like, why would anyone do that? You know, because here I was 13, you know?
Right. I just learned how to use it. I don't want to get rid of it.
Exactly. So yeah, it wasn't so much the suicide as it was the castration.
Good times.
good times. But, so yeah. Now it comes to you.
Do you have any,
I have nothing to talk to you guys.
I know we were talking about a certain Muppet-related movie earlier.
Yeah, there's a handful of things that I remember from childhood that definitely screwed me up. And speaking about TV shows, you reminded me of, and I was actually just talking to my wife about this. Remember 911 emergencies?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. William Shatner.
Oh, specifically the episode in which the kid and the toothbrush, remember that one?
No.
Well, there's a, this, no, this is the one that screwed me up, but basically it was like this kid, like this, like, you know, I forget how old, was brushing his teeth and he fell on his toothbrush and it, like, jabbed him in the throat and it's like and it was like stuck in his throat.
Oh, fuck.
like punctured.
I might remember that.
Yeah, it, like, punctured through, and he's like, and it just showed this kid, like, walking around, like, crying and, like, and it,
oh shit,
yeah, it totally fucked me up. And I'm sure everyone's like, I remember that, because, like, my wife and I were like, seriously, she, like, mentioned, like, 911, like, the toothbrush, she was like, yes. Like, we both knew exactly where each other was going.
There was an episode of that show that I remember vividly about a kid in a pool and, like, the water became electrified.
I do remember that
and,
one.
And, like, some guy was like, oh my god, he's drowning, and he walked over and tried to grab the kid, and then he became electrified to the point where he was, like, paralyzed, like, he couldn't move, he just kept holding on.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm an electrician.
There you go. I remember one where a bee crawled into a kid's, like, can of pop, and then he drank it, and the bee stung him on the lip, and he was allergic. So, like, he turned around to face his mom, and his face was all puffed up.
Oh,
and
no.
For, like, years, I would like, look inside the opening of my pot to make sure there were no bees in it.
Yeah.
You could have a whole episode just on that show.
That show was pretty horrifying. But as far as, like, things that I guess I saw well before I probably should have seen... And we don't have to go into all of them because this probably could go for a while.
Yeah.
But real quick, Wizards.
Yes.
Is the one I saw earlier. And that's like early animation at its finest, too. Mm-hmm. So going back and watching it, the movie's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But when you
is it Ralph Bashke, I think?
Yeah. Okay. Made Fritz the Cat. And
yeah.
But when you saw it as a kid, that was not the right time to see that.
Yeah.
And the same vein, I also saw Dark Crystal. I think I saw a little too early. But that, going back and seeing that again, that's also
it's an amazing movie,
and it's like creepy in the right way. And it's actually it isn't as bad as Wizards. And then what was the one I was just? There's another one that is like really screwed me up. Oh, I saw Akira really early.
I have a fun Akira story, but you can go ahead.
Well,
but,
there's nothing fun about it. I saw it, and it totally like hooked me onto anime.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things that's just like, this is fucking insane.
The whole body mod thing.
Well, just the body mod thing, the fact that Kaneda turns into that gelatinous, tumorous,
and then eats his girlfriend
and crushes everyone. The doll, like, there's so much fucked up imagery in that movie that when you're young and not understanding what the hell is going on,
yeah.
But I was hooked ever since then.
Okay, fun story time. Again, here I am, super Japanophile. Everything from Japan is automatically awesome by nature of it being from Japan.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, but that's how I thought when I was like 16 or whatever.
Me too.
But,
I used to watch Sailor Moon because it was anime.
Yeah.
And while during that, I'm like, why am I watching this?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's anime.
But I had never seen Akira. Like they always had like promos for it on Sci-Fi, but I don't know if they ever showed it. Or if they did, I didn't see it.
Probably like that
I really, really, really want a Blu-ray copy of that. But they do limited printings of it, and they haven't printed them recently. So, like, if you want to buy,
Criterion should do something
Criterion
like that.
Criterion
should
be awesome. I would love a Criterion Akira.
I would love, like, a super ultra deluxe director, all the shit, all the things Akira edition Blu-ray.
Yep. But anyway, when I got into high school, I met other, like-minded people who were into anime, and my best friend's dad had a VHS of Akira that was in the original Japanese with subtitles, so I was like, all right, it's anime, and it's real anime in Japanese, you know? It was, like, double the pleasure for me, so I borrowed it from her, and I talked to my brother Stevie. This was 98, so I was 16, so he was, like, 8.
Oh, no.
And I said to him, hey, you like Dragon Ball Z, you like anime, I got this. This is, like, the best anime ever. Let's watch it. Then we watched it.
Why do you do this to your brother?
I'm so sorry, Stevie. I didn't know. I was a kid. I thought it was just cool anime. The end scene when Tetsuo turns into the blob and eats his girlfriend, my brother left. And later on, he told me he went to the bathroom to throw up.
Really?
Yeah. And he was like, Forrest, can you please turn this off? And here I was like, but it's anime, and anime is awesome, you know?
I'm cultured, you don't know any better.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my god.
So I'm going to take this moment to say, I'm so sorry, Stevie. He said to me, like, years later, like, it was really good. Like, I really liked it, but I was just way too young for it. And I was like, I know, I'm sorry. I still feel bad about that.
That's how a lot of young boys feel when they leave church or their uncle's house. It felt good. I just didn't. I wasn't old enough to understand.
I don't know. You can't hear this, but I'm shaking my head. Yeah. Very disappointingly right now.
Perhaps we should wrap this up.
Please.
Yes. So,
yes, that means use protection, uncles.
So,
the police will be there soon.
Don't give Timmy all your STDs.
we really went on a tangent in things that terrify kids. Like, this just took a dark turn.
Thank you, Sallow.
Yeah.
Oh. I blame you for this, Boris. It's all your fault.
It's all my fault. Oh, no. But, yeah, that's that. Hey, you guys should totally comment about stuff that traumatized you as a child.
Yes, definitely.
Everyone has their own stories. Like, I mean, we just spent a fucking hour talking about ours. Yeah. So, you know.
Also, we have that contest thing going on.
More reason to comment.
Yeah, we're going to pick a winner this week. So maybe by the end of the week, next couple days.
Cool prizes.
I have a shout out, if you guys don't mind.
Yeah, oh, sure.
Hey, it's one of our close friends' birthday this weekend.
Who?
Randy.
Oh, Randy, yeah. He's been on your show a handful of times, right?
He's been on this show once for the Eerie Horror Fest.
Yeah, the second, first episode.
Yeah.
But I just want to say happy birthday.
Yes, okay. Happy birthday, Randy.
Happy birthday. We should get him on again.
He's a pretty cool dude.
Yeah.
He's pretty okay.
Yeah. He's pretty okay.
I mean, I wouldn't let him date my sister, but... I'm kidding. I don't even have a sister.
All right, so that's it for this this fun grab bag of Slaughter Films memories. Be sure to check out our website, slaughterfilm.com. We've got news and we've got reviews related to horror.
Yes, make sure to leave a comment and we will make sure to read it and also comment on a later recording.
Peace out.
Goodbye.
This edition of Slaughter Film has been brought to you by our producer, John Linvay, introduced by me, Ricky Morrow, and music by Xeno Genocide.